and his judgment not only decides what is right or wrong of its own nature, but also what is practically evil and therefore to be avoided. In other words, the reason prescribes to the will what it should seek after or shun in view of the eventual attainment of man's last end, for the sake of which all his actions ought to be performed. This ordination of reason is called law. In man's free will, therefore, or in the moral necessity of our voluntary acts being in accordance with reason, lies the very root of the necessity of law. Nothing more foolish can be uttered or conceived than the notion that because man is free by nature, he is therefore exempt from law. Were this the case, it would follow that to become free, we must be deprived of reason. Whereas the truth is that we are bound to submit to law precisely because we are free by our very nature. For law is the guide of man's actions. It turns him towards good by its rewards, and deters him from evil by its punishments. Foremost in this office comes the natural law, which is written and engraved in the mind of every man. And this is nothing but our reason commanding us to do right and forbidding sin. The law of nature is the same thing as the eternal law, implanted in rational creatures and inclining them to their right action and end, and can be nothing else but the eternal reason of God, the Creator and ruler of the whole world. What has been said of the liberty of individuals is no less applicable to them when considered as bound together in civil society. For what reason and the natural law do for individuals, that human law, promulgated for their good, does for the citizens of states. Of the laws enacted by men, some are concerned with what is good or bad by its very nature. But such laws by no means derive their origin from civil society. Because just as civil society did not create human nature, neither can it be said to be the author of the good which befits human nature, or of the evil which is contrary to it. Laws come before men live together in society, and have their origin in the natural, and consequently in the eternal law. The precepts, therefore, of the natural law, contained bodily in the laws of man, have not merely the force of human law, but they possess that higher and more august sanction which belongs to the law of nature and the eternal law. And within the sphere of this kind of laws, the duty of the civil legislator is mainly to keep the community in obedience by the adoption of a common discipline, and by putting restraint upon refractory and viciously inclined men, so that, deterred from evil, they may turn to what is good, or at any rate, may avoid causing trouble and disturbance to the state. Now there are other enactments of the civil authority which do not follow directly, but somewhat remotely, from the natural law, and decide many points which the law of nature treats only in a general and indefinite way. It is in the constitution of these particular rules of life, suggested by reason and prudence, and enacted by competent authority, that human law, properly so called, consists, binding all citizens to work together for the attainment of the common end proposed to the community, and forbidding them to depart from this end. And insofar as human law is in conformity with the dictates of nature, leading to what is good and deterring from evil. From this it is manifest that the eternal law of God is the sole standard and rule of human liberty, not only in each individual man, but also in the community and civil society which men constitute when united. Therefore, the true liberty of human society does not consist in every man doing what he pleases, for this would simply end in turmoil and confusion and bring about the overthrow of the state, but rather in this, that through the injunctions of the civil law, all may more easily conform to the prescriptions of the eternal law. End of quote. In order, therefore, that a man should be free, that is, capable of willing what is in order, the organization of society, that is, the laws of society to which he belongs, should favor the development of virtue and hinder vice, thus aiming at promoting material progress in accordance with man's final end, the life of the mystical body in heaven. Where the laws and organization of society are against the order of the world, the average man is in danger of succumbing to the dominating influences and of becoming, at best, indifferent. Pope Leo XIII writes, quote, "So long as Christ does not reign over nations, his influence even over individuals remains superficial and exposed to overthrow. If it is true that the work of the apostolate consists in the conversion of individuals and that nations do not go to heaven but souls, one by one, we must not forget, nevertheless, that the individual member of society lives under the never-ceasing influence of his environment, in which, if we may not say that he is submerged, he is at least deeply plunged. If the environment is non-Catholic, it prevents him from embracing the faith, or, if he has the faith, it tends to root out of his heart every vestige of belief. If we suppose Catholic social institutions, with our Lord no longer living in the hearts of the individual members of society, then religion is merely a signboard which will soon disappear. But, on the other hand, try to convert individuals without Catholicizing the social institutions, and your work is without stability. The structure you erect in the morning, others will tear down in the evening. Is not the strategy of the enemies of God there to teach us a lesson? They want to destroy the faith in the hearts of individuals, it is true, but they direct still more vigorous efforts to the extirpation of religion from social institutions. Even one defeat of God in this domain means the weakening, if not the ruin, of the faith in the souls of many." End of quote.